Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is where the contrast between what has happened in New Jersey and what is happening in Washington, D.C. is the most clear. In New Jersey, over the last 20 months, you have actually seen divided government that's working.
Oh, functional New Jersey. How often do we hear that? So is he or isn't he is the question on most media's lips today. After Chris Christie's national politics speech at the Reagan Library last night, we will ask it too because we have to. But mostly, for the first part of our show today, we will ask a different question. What did he say? Because I think this was a really interesting speech. First, though, before we get to Chris Christie, I want to invite you to a little experiment we're planning for an hour from now. As you may know, cell phone service debuted yesterday at 6 subway station platforms in Manhattan, mostly along 14th Street, the first ever underground cell phone service. We want you, if you're near that area, lower Manhattan, to go to one of those stations and call in on the air at 11 o'clock. It's the A, C, E, and L stations at 8th Avenue and West 4th Street, 14th Street, the 8th Avenue, 14th Street stop, the 7th Avenue and 14th Street stop, the 1, 2, and 3 station there, the 6th Avenue and 14th Street stop, that's where the L and the F and the M come, and also the C&E local 8th Avenue station at West 23rd Street. So it's the 14th Street stops on 8th Avenue, 7th Avenue, and 6th Avenue, and also the 8th Avenue stop at West 23rd Street. Now, the MTA says this is a testing phase and available only to T-Mobile and AT&T subscribers for now. And we want you, if you fit into that category, to help test out the new service in the first ever Brian Lehrer Show subway platform cell phone flash mob. That'll be at 11 o'clock, okay? So just about an hour from now, we'll do that little experiment asking you to go to one of those stops and use your cell phone to call the show. Now, we're also going to text you our phone number so that you know it, and some instructions. So if you're going to be near one of those stations around 11 o'clock today, or you feel like cutting out of whatever you're doing and helping out, you can text right now the word platform to 30644. We'll text you back some information and then send you another text at 11 o'clock with your instructions. So sign up now, text platform to 30644. If you think you may want to go to one of those subway platforms at 11 o'clock, for a text and call-in experiment, okay? So we hope to hear from you in about an hour from a subway platform if you're in the 14th or 23rd Street area on the west side. But back to Chris Christie. To my ear, this was a very interesting speech and kind of a politically independent speech. He showed some love for the leaders of the Democratic Party in New Jersey. He showed some interest in the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Commission plan, which has mostly been a punching bag for both left and right. He invoked the importance of compromise in politics. Let's do a word count on Mitt Romney's and Rick Perry's recent speeches and see how many times compromise comes up. We will play all those clips. So whether he is or isn't, or he's setting up for 2016, this was a potentially very significant speech, I think, for its content and the national conversation that it can spark if we in the media get off the horse race for a minute and talk about the content. So let's talk about it with Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record of Northern New Jersey. Hey, Mike, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning.
And let's dive right into our first clip. Remember, this was the Reagan Library.
Sure.
So he talked first about his favorite Reagan moment, which was when Reagan fired the air traffic controllers just months into his first term as president, when the air traffic controllers staged an illegal public employees strike.
If President Reagan would do that at home, leaders around the world realized that he would do it abroad as well. Principle would not stop at the water's edge. The Reagan who challenged Soviet aggression or who attacked a Libya that supported terror was the same Reagan who stood up years before to PATCO at home for what he believed was right.
So, Mike Kelly, interesting that he linked that to being tough on foreign affairs and having credibility in the world, never mind that he kind of put Stalin and some burnt-out air traffic controllers in the same breath. But that was an easy affinity. Christie, of course, has been tough on unions in New Jersey. I don't want to linger on this too much because maybe that was just, you know, to establish his political street cred.
Well, I actually take a slightly contrarian view on this, Brian, because I've actually written that Christie is not ready to run because he lacks experience. And I think that comment showed his lack of experience. To compare the Reagan decision over the air traffic controllers to the Soviet Union and the Iron Curtain is just flat out naive. But I think what Christie was really doing there was he was sending a message back to New Jersey, which was, hey, look, I am going to fight the unions, because that's where his battles have really been back here in New Jersey. It's been against the unions. But to stand before the Reagan Library crowd and say, hey, this is comparable to fighting the Soviets, I just think was naive.
Well, yeah, the burnt out air traffic controllers
compared
to Stalin. But that was maybe the low point of the speech. But now look where he takes it for the real body of the speech, the central message. And we're going to play an extended excerpt now, 2.5 minutes, in which he says something you rarely hear in the taverns of Secaucus, and that is that New Jersey politics can be a role model for America. 2.5 minutes of Chris Christie at the Reagan Library.
You have actually seen divided government that's working. To be clear, it doesn't mean we don't have argument or acrimony. I think you've all seen my YouTube videos. There are serious disagreements, sometimes expressed loudly, you know, Jersey style. Hey, a few New Jerseyans out there. Well, listen, here's what we did. We identified the problems. We proposed specific means to fix them. We educated the public on the dire consequences of inaction. And then we compromised on a bipartisan basis to get results. In other words, we did what government is supposed to do. We took action. That's what people expect. How do we do this? How do we do it? Through leadership and compromise. Leadership and compromise is the only way you can balance two budgets with over $13 billion in deficits without raising taxes while protecting core services. Leadership and compromise is the only way you reform New Jersey's pension and health benefits system that was collectively $121 billion underfunded. Leadership and compromise is the only way you can cap the highest property taxes in the nation and cap the interest arbitration awards for public employees of some of the most powerful public sector unions in America at no greater than a 2% increase. In New Jersey, we've done this and more because the executive branch has not sat by and waited for others to go first to suggest solutions to our state's most difficult problems. Being a mayor, being a governor, being a president means leading by taking risk on the most important issues of the day. That has happened in Trenton. In New Jersey, we've done this with a legislative branch held by the opposite party because it's led by two people who have more often put the interests of our state above the partisan politics of their caucuses. And that's why I call them my friends.
2.5 minutes of Governor Chris Christie speaking at the Reagan Library last night. We're talking about the speech with Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record of Northern New Jersey. And we can take your reactions. Listeners, what did you think about that? What did you think about Chris Christie as a potential presidential candidate, whether in this cycle or in 2016, invoking leadership and compromise? Or giving a shout out to Sweeney and Oliver, the leaders of the Democrats in the New Jersey legislature, 212-433-WNYC, or comparing the burnt-out air traffic controllers to Stalin, any of it, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Mike Kelly, what did you think of that passage? I thought it was kind of remarkable, or at least unusual, for a potential Republican presidential candidate who would have to run in the primaries to be talking so much about compromise.
Sounds like a presidential candidate, doesn't it? I think so. I mean, this is the great mystery with Christie, and he seems to be the reluctant suitor. He keeps saying, you know, I want to have a relationship with you. I want to have a relationship with you. And he's saying all the right things, but really, when the time comes time for commitment, he keeps backing off. And I think I don't know where this is going to lead. There's a very interesting comment today in the New York Times by one of his closest, identified as one of his close associates, and they talk for the first time I've ever seen this comment where they said, Christie keeps saying no, but the window for deciding is still open. And that's the first time I've ever heard anything out of the Christie camp which has indicated that they are weighing their options.
But if he is, and right. Again, I'm more interested in the content of the speech, what kind of a candidate or president is he setting himself up to be? Because, again, I don't think we're going to hear such central invoking of compromise as a political good from the likes of Rick Perry or Mitt Romney or Michelle Bachmann or the others who are currently running.
No, because those candidates, I believe, Brian, are appealing to the Tea Party element of the Republican Party. And I think Christie, keep in mind where Christie was speaking yesterday. He was speaking at the Reagan Library. This is basically the establishment end of the Republican Party. These are the folks who kind of came of age with Ronald Reagan. We lose sight of the fact that was in 1980. That's a long time ago. This is very much the aging end of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is very much divided right now between, you know, the Tea Party and the establishment end. And the establishment end is looking at the current lineup of candidates that they've seen, you know, Michelle Bachmann and the others, and they're saying, this looks like the bar scene from Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so they're saying, we need somebody out there who can win. And Christie very much fits that Reagan mold. He's a terrific speaker. He says things in a very principled way, just like Reagan used to do. And yet he's also a smart enough politician that he knows how to get things done, just what Reagan used to do. Remember those meetings that Reagan had with Tip O'Neill where they'd each pour a glass of scotch and figure out how to compromise on the budget?
And we're going to hear Christie in the next clip invoke that a little bit. and you know, it's not the way you usually hear the right-wing talk show host and some
right.
of the candidates invoke Reagan. They invoke Reagan as Mr. Pure of conservative values, and the compromise part gets left out. So, let's go right on to that clip. So more Chris Christie, and if we just heard the way he framed functional New Jersey politics, here is the flip side, his framing of dysfunctional Washington.
In Washington, on the other hand, we have watched as we drift from conflict to conflict with little or no resolution. We watch a president who once talked about the courage of his convictions, but still has yet found the courage to lead. We watch a Congress at war with itself because they're unwilling to leave campaign-style politics at the Capitol's door. The result is a debt ceiling limitation debate that made our democracy appear as if we could no longer effectively govern ourselves. And still, we continue to wait and hope that our president will finally stop being a bystander in the Oval Office. We hope that he will shake off the paralysis that has made it impossible for him to take on the really big things that are so obvious to all Americans and to a watching and anxious world. Yes, we hope. Because each and every time the president lets a moment to act pass him by, his failure is our failure, too. The failure to stand up for the bipartisan debt solutions of the Simpson-Bowles Commission, a report the president asked for himself. The failure to act on the country's crushing unemployment. The failure to act on ever-expanding and rapidly eroding entitlement programs. The failure to discern pork barrel spending from real infrastructure investment. You see, the rule for effective governance is simple. It's the one Ronald Reagan knew by heart. It's the one he successfully employed with Social Security and the Cold War. When there is a problem, you fix it. That's what you do. That's what he did. That's the job we've been sent to do, and you cannot wait for someone else to do it when you're sitting in the Oval Office.
two more minutes of Governor Chris Christie speaking about national politics at the Reagan Library yesterday. We're talking about the speech with Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record. And, you know, so again, Mike, there we are. He dished to the president, to be sure, but he also dished to the Republican Congress. Again, I wonder if he's staking out some indie ground.
Well, I definitely think that. I also think he is taking aim at keep in mind, you know, again, Brian, all politics is local, to refer to Tip O'Neill, that famous statement. And what I think Christie is also doing is serving notice to the Democratic-dominated congressional delegation that he may try to mount an attempt to take over, or at least have a Republican win there back in New Jersey. And also, too, keep in mind, we have legislative elections taking place back here in New Jersey that I think Christie has probably got his ear to. But let's talk about the bigger picture here. Those statements, courage to lead and accusing Obama of being a bystander in the White House, those are loaded statements. And I think one needs to take them very, very seriously, because Christie is essentially saying, listen, I want to be part of the national conversation. The question is he going, where's that conversation going to take him? And I frankly believe that the next 2-3 weeks, when a lot of the filings have to be done for the presidential primaries, that's going to be where the so-called rubber meets the road for Chris Christie. Is he going to jump off and get into this fray, or is he simply going to just be a bystander? So far, he's been a bystander, and does he have the courage to jump in? I mean, if I was Barack Obama, I would come back today and say, hey, listen, you're a bystander. I'm in the Oval Office. If you want part of it, jump in. And so far, Christie hasn't done that.
And the one other centrist reference I want to bring up is Simpson Bowles in that clip, which is nobody's idea of a good time. You know, that was the Deficit Commission report that was produced by a bipartisan committee that was too liberal for the GOP because it would ask for more taxes, too conservative for the Democrats because it would ask for some painful cuts to entitlement programs, but, you know, again, not acceptable to the Republicans for the most part, but he invoked it in that speech, even though he did it to criticize the president.
Because I think Christie comes from a part of the Republican Party, I would call it the Tom Kaine end of the Republican Party, the Michael Bloomberg end of the Republican Party. These are Republicans who have been elected in largely Democratic areas. Keep in mind, New Jersey is a Democratic state. New York City is a Democratic city, and yet we've got two very, very articulate and very good leaders in the Republican Party there, in Michael Bloomberg and Chris Christie. And the way they've gotten elected is by steering clear of the Tea Party positions of digging your heels and that sort of thing. And I think this really reflects a kind of internal battle in the Republican Party as much as the national political battle that we've seen played out in Congress.
It was kind of a Bloombergian speech in the ways that we've been discussing.
Very much.
Although,
so,
of course, Bloomberg would say, hey, don't call me a Republican. I'm an independent.
Right.
John in Bradley Beach, are you buying it?
I'm not buying it. You know, I think there's this myth that Chris Christie is, you know, this tough-talking guy that's getting lots of stuff done in Trenton. And the way I see it is that there's some spineless Democrats that are rolling over, and that's why it seems like he's getting stuff done. But, I perceive Christie, he's more like a it's my way or the highway kind of guy. And I agree with him that what we need is somebody that can compromise, put the country first and all that in Washington. But I don't see that that's what he's doing in New Jersey at all.
John, thank you. Yeah, so how do we square that, Mike Kelly? This is Governor Christie, Mr. Get Off the Beach, Mr.
That's right.
You know, become popular through YouTube videos where he screams at teachers, and he's invoking bipartisanship and unity.
Well, in order to get granted, I mean, he does say some things that are pretty would indicate, as the caller just said, that it's my way or the highway. But when you actually get things done in Trenton, he had a Democratic-dominated Senate and Assembly. he had to get to those folks and sit down with them and say, listen, how do we do this together? And granted, they called each other names. I mean, Senate President Stephen Sweeney wasn't exactly enamored with Christie when Christie signed the budget bill and then and vetoed quite a bit of programs that were near and dear to Sweeney's heart. But the bottom line here is that those three folks, Christie, Senate President Sweeney, and Assembly Speaker Sheila Oliver, they had to sit down and compromise, and he had to get their votes in order to win. You don't do that by saying my way or the highway all the time.
And what about him giving direct praise in this national speech to Sweeney and Oliver? We tried to get either of them on.
Right.
You know, Sweeney, the leader of the state Senate, Oliver, the leader of the state assembly, both Democrats, to come on and bask in the glow of Chris Christie's love for a couple of minutes with you this morning, but they both declined. I gather Mother Jones unearthed these dealings between Sheila Oliver and Christie, where she was facing a possible revolt among Democrats in the assembly, and Christie told her that he would have her back, which meant he would get some Republicans in the assembly to vote for her continued leadership if need be. So what is a New Jersey Democrat supposed to make of Sheila Oliver after that?
They're supposed to make of it that Sheila Oliver knew where to get the bacon, and she went right to Chris Christie, and he came. He saw a moment where he could enter into her world and do something for her, and he'll collect on the favor later, or he's already collected on it. I mean, this is the way politics works. We think if you listen to a lot of the conservative talk shows, you think that politics is about shouting at each other. When you really watch legislative action on the ground level, whether it's at state legislatures in Albany or Connecticut or down in New Jersey even, it often becomes a matter of, apparent rivals coming together and figuring out how they can get things done. You see that all the time in Congress. I mean, people who you think are going to be, hating each other turn out to be sometimes actually helping each other and co-sponsoring each other's bills.
Sure.
We saw a lot of that when Ted Kennedy's funeral, when all of these Republicans, Orrin Hatch and others, came out and said, how Kennedy had helped them get through some bills. That's how
No Child Left Behind was Bush Kennedy.
Exactly.
The comprehensive immigration reform was Kennedy. Who? Kennedy Hatch, maybe?
Correct.
So people forget.
McCain-Feingold.
Again, Joe and Patterson, another one, not buying it. Right, Joe?
Okay, Brian, I'm a firm listener for many years. I have a respect for Mr. Kelly, too. I am surprised on both of you. Mr. Christie is the most corrupted politician, made a deal with the Northward bosses in Essex County to get all the votes. Are you kidding me? Are we going to have a policy of the country in the hand of politician? Northward boss was being investigated by Christie when he was a U.S. Attorney General. Suddenly, he stopped investigation. There is no corruption. His Attorney General, State Attorney General, has to stop all the corruption activities. That's not just giving your soul. The problem with you guys in the radio and media, you don't want to upset anybody because you lose your access to them. You have to investigate what happened, why the investigation was stopped, why Christie suddenly received 90,000 votes in Essex County, which was all black communities. You don't ask those questions. And then you keep broadcasting. Christie has zero chance to win national election number one because you have Republicans in South that they're never going to vote for him. They will vote for Obama rather than vote for Christie. So please stop this nonsense. You are both established media persons. You both know what's going on in New Jersey and what he did.
Joe, thank you very much. And by the way, as for access, Chris Christie doesn't make a habit of coming on the show. But Mike, on his larger point,
right. That
here Christie is holding up New Jersey as a symbol of functional government. And Joe, I think, bottom line, is saying, come on, this is corrupt New Jersey we're talking about, Chris Christie included.
First of all, I take issue with what the caller just said about these investigations being stopped by Chris Christie. We've seen nothing of the kind, as a matter of fact. But did Chris Christie make some alliances with people who he perhaps might not have wanted to make alliances with? Of course he did. Name me a successful politician who has never done that sort of thing. The real issue here is, is Chris Christie corrupt? I don't believe he is. I really don't. I haven't seen the evidence of that. I think what's going on here is that the more we hear from Chris Christie and the more he speaks and the more we analyze what he's saying and how he actually got into office and how his government works, we're seeing, I think, politics and government up close and personal. And it is very much a process by which candidates and elected officials have to make compromises, have to dance with the other side, so to speak.
Right.
And Chris Christie's trying to send that message out, I think.
Before you go,
sure.
Want to weigh in briefly on the Snooki subsidy? Was Christie right to veto the tax gift to the TV show Jersey Shore?
Yes, he was. I mean, he had to do that. If he did not do that, he would have looked like a fool, even though it's somewhat hypocritical because they give tax breaks to other groups. But this was so outlandish that a show like Jersey Shore would get a tax break, and a tax break that was really quite hefty.
But is a show like Jersey Shore the issue? That was the governor's issue. Bad image for New Jersey. But I don't know. I think you could argue either way whether it helps or hurts the New Jersey economy. Maybe it brings in tourists, whatever. But why should taxpayer subsidies go to a commercially successful private sector entertainment product in the first place? That's my question. It's making lots of money in the private sector all by itself. Why would they have spent taxpayer dollars on that rather than the schools or the transportation trust fund or reduce property taxes a little bit or anything?
We give tax breaks to all kinds of people, for whether they be real estate developers or that sort of thing. That's not unusual here. I think what we really saw played out here, Brian, was Chris Christie was burnishing his image. He had to come forward and say this was a win-win for him. He doesn't like the show. A lot of people in New Jersey don't like the show. Christie had to come down on this.
Mike Kelly from The Record, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, what we learn about Mayor Bloomberg from the John Hagerty trial taking place in New York City right now. And then we will talk about cyberbullying and the word drama. How many of your teens come home and say, oh, there's so much drama at school? Well, it turns out that there may be maybe more code in that word than you even realize. So stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.